We love something we can never have.
His thin, sour lips turned down with satisfaction.
Here, have a cup of wine.
The Chancellor's hand trembled. He swallowed the wine in one gulp, and the Baron poured him more. He downed that too. Silence settled. The dog nestled its babyish face into its master's belly and pretended to sleep. The vehicle stopped, then moved forward again. The two men listened to the creaking of the wheels and the soft groans of the planks beneath them. At last, they were across the half-frozen river, off the bridge, and bumping along an old Roman road over a vast white plain. The sky was sullen, and snow began falling again.
I must have vengeance.
The Baron grinned.
Problem is, Tom, how can a commoner revenge himself against a king? Not to mention that the king is the man he is in love with.
Still you torment me.
If you'd forget your injured heart for a moment and think...
Thomas was silent.
Well?
Receiving no answer, Baron Richard de L'Aigle gave his own.
You must seize a weapon mightier than his sword. And there's only one. The cross.
He grinned again.
I see a light begins to dawn in you.
Henry kills anyone who challenges his power,
Becket replied. His companion nodded. Standing behind a parapet high above, two men watched the progress of the wagon. One remarked, "They're heading for Bonmulon." The other turned to him in a voice so deep it seemed to emerge from beneath the earth. He rumbled,
"Thomas not such a fool to flee to Louis' court. With matters as they stand between England and France, we could arrest him for treason."
The first replied sulkily, "I'm going indoors before I freeze." Inside the wagon, Becket sat up. The tears on his cheeks had dried.
"I'd like to kill him," he said.
The eagle smiled.
"Vengeance is patient, Tom. It keeps its own counsel and walks like the panther cat."
The skin around his reddish-brown eyes bunched and almost softened with amusement.
"Maybe you can kill him."
The hint of a smile appeared in Becket's own eyes, large, oval, and unusually beautiful.
"I could ruin him."
"You could ruin the most admired prince in Europe?"
"You don't know what I could do."
"I know you fell in love with a glowing son when he was hardly more than a boy. You believed you could seduce him."
L'Aigle cawed with laughter.
"How our little group used to giggle about that. Seduce Henry Plantagenet?"
Becket pressed his lips together.
"If you're ever to take vengeance and seize the mightiest sword, you must return to court."
"I won't. He'd only wound me again."
Richard turned towards his companion to stroke the cheek he had struck. He picked up a ring-heavy hand, running his fingers across it.
"So soft,"
he murmured.
"To please the king, thousands have died at the command of this white hand."
The Chancellor ignored his companion's observation.
"When I was a member of the royal familiar, he promised me I was to rear the crown prince as my foster son. I would have moulded that child so he adored me, so that when he took the throne, he'd do my bidding."
"You'd be England's regent," exclaimed the Baron. "And sooner rather than later. With a king to die in battle, or from something else,"
he added. No one was more skilled than Becket in the dark arts of the courtier. He watched his friend's mind dwelling on his own unspoken thoughts. Suddenly the Chancellor said,
"Pour me another cup of wine."
A deep pain still stamped his features, but his voice had regained its authority.
"It's written in the Bible. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. The Almighty will ensure my vengeance."
"Actually, it's a warning that vengeance should be left to Jehovah."